Chapter 10. Jack Daniel's neat, Raphael O'Mara said cheerfully. Make that a double. Best medicine I know to clear the brain of jungle rot. How long were you in Costa Rica? Asked Pitt. 3 months. Rained the whole time. Bombay gin on the rocks with a twist, Pitt said to the barmaid. So you're joining the greedy ranks of the sea scavengers, O'Mara said, the words emanating through a thick Gabby Hayes beard that hid his face from the nose down. Dirk Pitt, a treasure hunter. I never thought I'd see the day. My interest is purely academic. Sure, that's what they all say. Take my advice and forget it. More loot has been poured into underwater treasure hunts than was ever found. I can count on one hand the number of lucky discoveries that paid a profit in the last 80 years. The adventure, excitement, and riches, nothing but hype and all myth. I agree. O'Mara's barbed wire eyebrows narrowed. So what is it you want to know? Are you familiar with Raymond LeBaron? Old rich and reckless Raymond, the financial genius who publishes The Prospecteur? The same. He disappeared a couple of weeks ago on a blimp flight near the Bahamas. How could anybody disappear in a blimp? Somehow he managed. You must have heard or read something about it. O'Mara shook his head. I haven't watched TV or seen a newspaper in 90 days. The drinks were brought, and Pitt briefly explained the strange circumstances surrounding the mystery. The crowd was beginning to thin, and they had the bar mostly to themselves. And you think LeBaron was flying around in an old gas bag looking for a shipwreck loaded to the gills with the mother load? According to his wife, Jessie. What ship? The Cyclops. I know about the Cyclops, a Navy collier that vanished 71 years ago. I don't recall any report of riches on board. Apparently LeBaron thought so. What sort of treasure? The El Dorado. You've got to be kidding. I'm only repeating what I was told. O'Mara went quiet for a long moment, his eyes taking on a faraway look. El Hombre Dorado, he said at last. Spanish for the golden man or the gilded one. The legend, some call it a curse, has fired imaginations for 450 years. Is there any truth to it? Asked Pitt. Every legend is based on fact, but like all the others before and since, this one has been distorted and embellished into a fairy tale. El Dorado has inspired the longest continuing treasure hunt on record. Thousands of men have died searching for a glimpse of it. Tell me how the tale originated. Another Jack Daniels and Bombay gin arrived. Pitt laughed as O'Mara downed the water chaser first. Then the archaeologist made himself comfortable and stared into another time. The Spanish conquistadores were the first to hear of a gilded man who ruled an incredibly wealthy kingdom somewhere in the mountainous jungles east of the Andes. Rumors described him as living in a secluded city built of gold, with streets paved in emeralds and guarded by a fierce army of beautiful Amazons. Made Oz sound like a slum. Extremely overvalued, of course. But in reality, there were a number of El Dorados. A long line of kings who worshipped a demon god who lived in Lake Guadavita, Colombia. When a new monarch took command of the tribal empire, his body was painted with resinous gums and then coated with gold dust, thus the Gilded Man. Then he was placed on a ceremonial raft, piled high with gold and precious stones, and rowed into the middle of the lake, where he proceeded to pitch the riches into the water as an offering to the god, whose name escapes me. Was the treasure ever raised? There were any number of attempts to drain the lake, but they all failed. In 1965, the government of Colombia declared Guadavita an area of cultural interest and banned all salvage operations. A pity, when you consider that estimates of the wealth on the bottom of the lake run between $100 and $300 million. And the Golden City? Never found, said O'Mara, signaling the barmaid for another round. Many looked and many died. Nicolaus Federman, Ambrosius Dalfinger, Sebastian de Belalcazar, Gonzalo and Hernan Jimenez de Quesada, all sought El Dorado but only found the curse. So did Sir Walter Raleigh. After his second fruitless expedition, King James put his head on the block, literally. The fabulous city of El Dorado and the greatest treasure of them all remained lost.
"Let's back up a minute," said Pitt. "The treasure at the bottom of the lake is not lost."
"Well, that's in scattered pieces," explained O'Mara. "The second one, the grand prize, the bonanza at the end of the rainbow, remains hidden to this day. With maybe two exceptions, no outsider has ever laid eyes on it. The only description came from a monk who wandered out of the jungle into a Spanish settlement on the Orinoco River in 1675. Before dying a week later, he told of being on a Portuguese expedition looking for diamond mines. Out of 80 men, he was the only survivor. He claimed they'd stumbled into a deserted city surrounded by high cliffs and guarded by a tribe who called themselves Zenonas. The party lived in the city for 3 months, but one by one the men began to die off. Too late, they discovered the Zenonas were not as friendly as they made out, but were cannibals, poisoning the Portuguese and eating them. The monk alone managed to escape. He described massive temples and buildings, strange inscriptions, and the legendary treasure that sent so many of its hunters to their graves.
A true golden man, Pitt speculated, a statue.
You're close, said O'Mara. Damn close, but you missed on the sex.
Sex?
La Mujer Dorada, the golden woman, O'Mara replied. Or, more commonly, La Dorada. You see, the name first applied to a man and a ceremony, later to a city, and finally to an empire. Over the years, it became a term for any place where riches could be found on the ground. Like so many descriptions the feminists hate, the masculine myth became generic, while the feminine was forgotten.
Ready for another drink?
No, thanks. I'll nurse this one. O'Mara ordered another Jack Daniels. Anyway, you know the story behind the Taj Mahal. A Mughal ruler erected the ornate tomb as a monument to his wife. Same with a pre-Columbian South American king. His name is not recorded, but, so the legend goes, she was the most beloved of the hundreds of women at his court. Then an event occurred in the sky, probably either an eclipse or Halley's Comet, and the priests called on him to sacrifice her to appease the angry gods. Life was no fun in those days. So she was killed, heart torn out in an elaborate ceremony.
I thought only the Aztecs went in for heart removal.
The Aztecs didn't have a monopoly on human sacrifice. The upshot was the king called together his artisans and ordered them to build a statue of her likeness so he could elevate her to a god.
Did the monk describe it?
In vivid detail, if his story can be believed. She stands nude, nearly 6 feet tall, on a pedestal of rose quartz. Her body is solid gold. God, it must weigh at least a ton. Embedded in the chest, where the heart should be, is a great ruby, judged to be in the neighborhood of 1,200 carats.
I don't profess to be an expert, said Pitt, but I know that rubies are the most valuable of all the gemstones, and one of 30 carats is a rarity. 1,200 carats is unbelievable.
That's not even the half of it, O'Mara continued. The entire head of the statue is one gigantic carved emerald, deep blue-green and flawless. I can't begin to guess the carat weight, but it would have to hit the scales around 30 pounds.
More like 40 if you include a likeness of the hair.
What's the largest known emerald?
Pitt thought a moment. Certainly no more than 10 pounds.
Can't you just see her standing under spotlights in the main lobby of Washington's Museum of Natural History? O'Mara said wistfully.
I can only wonder at the value on today's market.
You could safely say it's priceless.
There was another man who saw the statue, Pitt asked.
Colonel Ralph Morehouse Sigler, a real character from the old explorer school. An engineer in the English army, he tramped around the empire, surveying boundaries and building forts throughout Africa and India. He was also a trained geologist and spent his leave time prospecting. He was either damned lucky or damned good, discovering an extensive chromite deposit in South Africa and several precious gemstone veins in Indochina. He became wealthy but didn't have time to enjoy it.
The Kaiser marched into France, and he was ordered to the Western Front to build fortifications. So he didn't enter South America until after the war. No. In the summer of 1916, he stepped off the boat at Georgetown in what was then British Guiana. It seemed some hotshot in the British Treasury got the bright idea of sending out expeditions around the world to find and open gold mines to finance the war. Sigler was recalled from the front and ordered into the South American interior. "You think he knew the monk story?" Pitt asked. "Nothing in his diaries or papers indicates he ever believed in a lost city. The guy was no wild-eyed treasure hunter. He was after raw minerals. Historic artifacts never interested him." "Are you hungry, Dirk?" "Yes, come to think of it. I was cheated out of dinner." "We're long past the dinner hour, but if we ask nice, I'm sure the kitchen can rustle up some appetizers." O'Mara gestured for the barmaid, and after pleading his case, persuaded her to serve them a platter of shrimp with cocktail sauce. "Hits the spot," said Pitt. "I could eat these little devils all day long," O'Mara agreed. "Now, where were we?" "Sigler was about to find La Dorada." "Oh, yes." After forming a party of 20 men, mostly British soldiers, Sigler plunged into the uncharted wilds. For months, nothing was heard of them. The British began to sense disaster and sent out several search parties, but none found a trace of the missing men. At last, nearly 2 years later, an American expedition, surveying for a railroad, stumbled upon Sigler 500 miles northeast of Rio de Janeiro. He was alone, the only survivor. Seems like an incredible distance from British Guiana. Almost 2,000 miles from his jump-off point as the crow flies. What kind of shape was he in? More dead than alive, according to the engineers who found him. They carried Sigler to a village that had a small hospital and sent off a message to the nearest American consulate. A few weeks later, a relief party arrived from Rio. American or British? An odd twist there, answered O'Mara. The British consulate claimed they were never notified of Sigler's reappearance. Gossip had it that the American consul general himself showed up to question him. Whatever happened, Sigler dropped from sight. The story is he escaped from the hospital and wandered back into the jungle. Doesn't figure that he'd turn his back on civilization after 2 years of hell, said Pitt. O'Mara shrugged. Who can say? Did Sigler give an account of his expedition before he disappeared? Raved in delirium most of the time. Witnesses said afterward that he babbled about finding a huge city surrounded by steep cliffs and overgrown by jungle. His description pretty much matched the Portuguese monk's. He also drew a rough sketch of the Golden Woman that was saved by a nurse and now lies in Brazil's National Library. I had a look at it while researching another project. The real thing must be an awesome sight. So it remains buried in the jungle. Ah, there's the rub, sighed O'Mara. Sigler claimed he and his men stole the statue and dragged it 20 miles to a river, fighting off the Zenona Indians the whole trip. By the time they built a raft, heaved La Dorada on board and pushed off, there were only 3 of them left. Later, one died of his injuries and the other was lost in a stretch of rapids. Pitt was fascinated by what O'Mara was telling him, but he was having a hard time keeping his eyes open. The obvious question is, where did Sigler stash the Golden Woman? If I only knew, replied O'Mara. Didn't he give a clue? The nurse thought he said the raft came apart and the statue dropped into the river a few hundred yards from where the surveyor's party found him. But don't get your hopes up. He was muttering nonsense. Treasure hunters have been dragging metal detectors up and down that river for years without reading a tick. Pitt swirled the ice cubes around inside his glass. He knew. He knew what happened to Ralph Morehouse Sigler and La Dorada. The American consul general, Pitt said slowly. He was the last person to see Sigler alive. The puzzle gets cloudy at this point, but as near as anyone can tell, the answer is yes. Let me see if I can fill in the pieces.
This took place in January and February of 1918, right? O'Mara nodded, and then he gave Pitt a queer stare. And the Consul General's name was Alfred Gottschalk, who died a few weeks later on the Cyclops, right?
You know this? Said O'Mara, his eyes uncomprehending.
Gottschalk probably heard of Sigler's mission through his counterpart at the British Consulate. When he received the message from the railroad surveyors that Sigler was alive, he kept the news to himself and headed into the interior, hoping to interview the explorer and steal a jump on the British by turning over any valuable information to his own government. What he learned must have shattered any code of ethics he still retained. Gottschalk decided to grab the bonanza for himself. He found and raised the golden statue from the river and then transported it, along with Sigler, to Rio de Janeiro. He covered his tracks by buying off anyone who might talk about Sigler, and, if my guess is correct, killing off the men who helped him recover the statue. Then, using his influence with the Navy, he smuggled them both on board the Cyclops. The ship was lost, and the secret died with her. O'Mara's eyes deepened in curious interest. Now that, he said, you can't possibly know. Why else would LeBaron be looking for what he thought was La Dorada?
You make a good case, O'Mara admitted. But you left the door open to a moot question. Why didn't Gottschalk simply kill Sigler after he found the statue? Why keep the Englishman alive?
Elementary. The Consul General was consumed by gold fever. He wanted La Dorada and the Emerald City, too. Sigler was the only person alive who could give him directions or lead him there.
I like the way you think, Dirk. Your wild-ass theory calls for another drink.
Too late. The bar is closed. I think they'd like us to leave so the help can get home to bed. O'Mara mimicked a crestfallen expression.
That's one nice thing about primitive living. No hours, no curfew.
He took a final swallow from his glass.
Well, what are your plans?
Nothing complicated, said Pitt, smiling. I'm going to find the Cyclops.